the Updown. I'm your host, Courtney Bradley. The Updown is a place where business owners can learn how to create kick-ass workspace where their people and their company thrive. Welcome back, everybody. I have been hoping to talk with you, Chris, forever, and now I'm thrilled that we're finally able to make this happen. I've had to reschedule. You've had to reschedule. It's been quite a journey. So welcome, Chris LaPata.
Thank you. Great to be here, Courtney. I've seen some of the work that you're doing, and I was honored to be invited. So well, thanks for having me.
I love the interaction. You and I met over through LinkedIn, through a mutual connection that didn't even introduce us. We just somehow like found each other. And it's just been really interesting to, you know, you're clearly in the architecture industry and in that field. And it's been really fun to watch that. I think your company and my company have a lot of alignment in the way that we approach what we each do for buildings and end users and things like that. So I've been, like I said, wanting to have you on here for quite some time for two reasons. One, because I think your company, the culture and what you guys are doing for your clients are clearly something that you'd believe for yourself. I don't think you guys could go out and promote the way that you do without living that internally.
True.
Yeah. So I think I want to definitely talk about that and how you guys work that within your own organization, but then also talk about, obviously, you know, like we said, when we decided we were going to have this podcast together, so many things going on in the industry right now and back to work and remote work and all that good stuff. So we'll dig into that. Would you mind? I have your bio, but I always think it's better for the person, instead of me reading it to everyone, for the person who's the guest to go ahead and share.
Yeah.
Tell us about yourself.
Again, great to be here, Courtney. Thank you. My name is Chris LaPata. I have 25 plus years of working in corporate workplace and helping clients with the built environment and just trying to create great experiences for people who have to come into work. And we know that that paradigm is changing rapidly. And I am what they call a client leader for a great architectural firm, a firm that's been around for 80 plus years, BHDP, Baxter Hodel, Donnelly and Preston, out of, they're based in Cincinnati, Ohio. I was hired on to help start up and lead the Southeast region. I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And I am not an architect. Full disclosure, never wanted to be an architect. I don't know why I work for an architectural firm. No, I know exactly why I work for BHDP is because one of the best compliments that we get from our clients is that we don't act like architects or talk like architects. We have a really unique approach to how we engage clients, and it really stems from our desire to understand the business first. It's really important. Before you even put pen to paper, it's really important to understand the business and what the business is trying to do, how they make money, mm-hmm. Understanding corporate risk factors,
yes.
and try to get in the heads of leadership. Our process aligns beautifully with my history. My background stems from the social sciences, where I was a communication major, interpersonal communication, and I have a foundation in sociology and psychology, which helped me to kind of address the human needs and the human aspect of work, and the design process that BHDP uses is founded in design thinking and user-centered design. So if for those of you who are out there that know about this firm called IDEO, based in Palo Alto, California, they kind of were the founding fathers of user-centered design. And that's really kind of putting the person in the middle of the problem and trying to understand what's going on through a lot of design thinking techniques like observation, demonstrating a lot of empathy, testing, piloting, measuring, and then it's very iterative. So our process is founded in that design thinking methodology, and we're very fortunate to have some world-class clients who have been long-term clients. And when we go and talk to clients, and we get a feel for whether or not they're going to be a long-term client by whether or not they kind of line up with some of our principles as a business, you know. So we want to make sure that we're working with clients who feel that space is a strategic asset, something to be leveraged, to help drive behaviors. Yeah.
Yes. And that's what we're all about.
Yeah. And help them to meet business objectives. It's not just a cost in a balance sheet somewhere that where they're trying to, you know, minimize that cost.
Well, I always say so the building is the building, right? And you're going to spend that money, whether you're going to be strategic about it or whether you're not going to be strategic about it, right? There's always going to be that cost associated with it. So if you consider it like you're talking about, that it is something to be leveraged to support your people and your business goals and your key performance indicators and all of that, then you're just going to be that much ahead of your competition.
Yeah. It's funny that senior leadership, CEOs don't wake up every morning thinking, wow, I would really like to build a new building today.
Right. It'd be nice if they did though, wouldn't it?
it would be awesome. Yeah. But they don't. I mean, they think about their reputation. They think about the culture of the organization. They think about share price, you know, and they think about, their people, you know, what are those behaviors, and all culture is behavior over time.
Yep.
You know, that's what kind of builds the culture. So the companies that we work with, people matter, you know, the BHDP tagline is designed for people. And if you could build the most beautiful space in the world, but if it's not, you know, meeting the needs of the users.
Right. Then it's going to be horrible.
Exactly.
So I feel like that's a perfect segue into, clearly there's been a ridiculous amount of talk about the future of the office and this and that. And, you know, I think everyone understands buildings aren't going away. Like that's not even possible. But where are you guys seeing, like, what are you hearing? What are you talking to your clients about? You know I have my opinion of what I think. So I, of course, I'm interested to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, it's been interesting. The last year or so has, shined a new light on, the role of space. I mean, there were a lot of organizations that fell on this continuum of, I need everybody in the office. And then they did not have a strategy for, you know, their digital transformation or their digital enablement of their employees. One of the best things that we did over the last year or so was to set up these end user roundtables. So we've had about four of them since COVID started. And we saw a lot of noise in the marketplace. We saw a lot of people jumping to all these crazy conclusions around, you know, what the role of workplace was going to be. You know, there's the 6-foot office and here's how we're going to keep everybody safe. And safety is emerged as, you know, one of the key drivers behind getting people back into the office. But we've proven to ourselves that people can work in a lot of different ways, and that, you know, there are people that can be productive. So when we set up these end user roundtables, we really wanted to give our clients the voice. Mm-hmm. You know, we can do all the research and we can develop all the, you know, thought leadership we want to, but it's really about giving our clients the voice and trying to figure out what's going on with them. And again, that's just demonstrating some empathy. So at the beginning, people were just planning for business continuity. All right, can we push everybody? Can we push everybody out of the office, give them the tech they need to stay connected and get their work done? And there were productivity upticks.
Right.
But, you know, as this thing has gone on, you know, I'd love to hear from you. How have you and your team kind of felt as this thing has gone on, and as you've been, you know, disconnected physically from each other longer? How have you responded?
Us internally, so we were already set up to be able to kind of work from anywhere, because that was 12 years ago when I started the company. Mm-hmm. I was already thinking about the fact that I don't like myself to have to be going into the office every day. I like to be out seeing clients, and I don't want to have to be tethered to the computer at my office. So, and I like to work from home sometimes, and I like to work from the lake sometimes. You know, I mean, it just, I wanted that flexibility for my team because I wanted it for myself. So I had a very open mind 12 years ago as to what that looked like. And so we were already set up. And I think the only thing that we are feeling maybe a little strain is because we are such a close-knit group of team members that we're friends on top of being coworkers, that we actually miss being together because we're friends, you know? And so it's nice. We have one who has only been to the office one time since, well, in a year.
Wow.
And she, yeah, and she is, she's our director of design, and she's able to, she's really good at working from home. You know, I always joke, I'm like, I'll know when she's not working because she has a physical deliverable. So I'll under, you know, and so no, she's amazing and does a great job for us. And then Katie and I, have been starting to come back in. You know, we've got our social distance. It's easy for us to stay pretty far apart, shouting to each other over the showroom. But so I think that the actually just for us, it's been the missing the camaraderie and the physicalness of being, you know, together, which I think a lot of people are probably feeling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that what CEOs are realizing now is that, you know, productivity, while there were some, you know, upticks in productivity gains early when we push people away, it's starting to dip a little bit, and people are starting to feel disconnected, and we know culture is suffering. And so one of the things we've been trying to talk to clients about is, you know, what's the role of the workplace, you know, in the future. And we're fortunate in that we've got some progressive firms that we work with that are willing to test and pilot. So we've launched several pilots.
Cool.
You've got to keep the ball moving forward. You can't stick your head in the sand, because you're not going to innovate.
Right.
So we're like, let's test a couple of things. Let's learn. Mm-hmm. And let's keep that, that feedback loop going. And you're sending a great message to your employees that, you know, we want to create whatever that next normal is for our workforce.
Right.
And they appreciate that. Now there, you know, there's a lot of communication that comes into play. There's some change management that has to be woven into that. People's initial physical and psychological safety have to be addressed. But we know that there are people that want to come back. There are some roles that may never need to come back.
Right.
But they need to be managed. Those expectations really need to be managed well. So it's been fun. We had a client call us up a couple weeks ago and say, you know what, we could try to launch these pilots, or we could try to, you know, rethink the workplace via Zoom or mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, virtual collaboration platform we want to use. But we would love to just do a 2-day working session, elbow to elbow, socially distanced, in a big training room, everybody right. wearing masks. And I tell you, we got more done in 2 days than we could have gotten done in 2 months working
right.
virtually.
Because well, everyone so was so focused on it, and you're there, and that's what you're doing, and that's cool.
Yeah, well, the communication is key in that you can't – it's really difficult to pick up on nonverbal cues.
Oh, yes.
When you're over Zoom or Skype or whatever, you know, platform, and so you can get to answers a lot quicker, or you can have disagreements, or you can ideate a lot better when you're in person. There's just
right.
there's no substitute for that, and so we know that part of the role of workplace moving forward is going to be to provide those large scale collaboration opportunities.
Right. Ugh, so exciting. I love change, so I'm like, I'm okay. You know, I wish we hadn't had to go through a global pandemic to get here, but I am excited for what I think some of the things that were becoming more prevalent, like, you know, focusing on mental health and wellness in the workplace. I feel like, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Do you feel like leaders are starting to look more seriously at those things on a whole, instead of just the progressive ones?
No, I do. I think leaders as a whole are looking at that, because I think that sense of disconnectedness is contributing to a lot of stress that people have. And we've been talking about eliminating stress from the workplace for years, you know. I think that the overall arching sentiment is that, you know, we definitely need to focus on employee health and well-being, and it's going to be a differentiator when we look at our workforce strategies. And so we have these workplace strategies that are great.
Right.
And now I think there's a huge microscope focused on workforce strategies. But because now we've proven that we can all work remote, right? So
right.
Why do I need to hire somebody in my home in that locality when I could probably find somebody that's working remote somewhere around the country
right.
to do a job? And you know, that work-life balance has been, you know, really prevalent. But I think that the whole, you know, factor of well-being, there's a bit of a renaissance as it relates to, you know, wellness and well-being and wanting to really think about how employees are being productive.
Correct.
One of the sticking points though is management. You know,
right.
most line of business leaders got put into their position because they did their job really, really well.
Right.
And they know the business really, really well, but they don't have a degree in organizational development or organizational
right.
psychology.
Right.
And so demonstrating empathy for the employee and their well-being needs is going to be hard for a lot of organizations.
It is. I try to always look at like what, but I'm a very, like, I'm really into the health and wellness. I'm into the health and wellness for employees. I enjoy those things and I'm interested in it. But I always try to put myself in, if I want to do something or I don't like doing something in my business or whatever, why would I make my employees do that? Or why would I, you know, not do something for myself and not for them? So I do try to be empathetic in that way, that if I'm, you know, put myself in their shoes, I guess. So, or I don't like to do something as the owner and then say, I'm going to go do this and you run along and do that work.
So as an owner, I mean, have you looked at, you know, what, I mean, productivity was always a really difficult measurement, you know,
right.
Unless you are in manufacturing, the manufacturing sector can measure productivity pretty well. You know, knowledge work was a really hard thing to get productivity measures around. How are you and your organization, you know, changing some of the metrics that you're using to track the success of the business?
So I can't believe I'm going to admit this, but we never, 12 years in business, well, actually, I'm going to say 10, because we kind of started implementing this a little bit before all the pandemic hit and then really been putting it into place since then. We had no real CRM. We had no sort of client management system that was software-based and had some structure behind it. I mean, it was just, it was pen and paper and us meeting together and talking about things. So through our efforts to set that up, we have been able to start measuring some of the things that, some of the more the knowledge work that we've been working on and things like that. So that's how we've done it, just by finally getting our act together.
Yeah. I mean, profitability is always, it's a great measurement,
right.
But it's not everything. I mean, there are other things that should be measured. In addition to that, It's employee satisfaction for a lot of organizations is key. So we've
right.
seen an uptick in surveying, which is good. Again, surveying is another great way to demonstrate empathy.
And I think,
absolutely.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you. I think for my team, it's funny because there's only three of us. I mean, I say we're small, but we're mighty, right? We pump a lot of business through here, but we are also, I mean, my team's been together, this particular team for 7 years now. So if someone's unhappy about something if there is something that they're like, I think we should do, we have a very open communication channel. They both feel very comfortable coming to me and being like, hey, can we change this? We had this idea for this. And every time they have an idea, it's way better than anything I could have ever thought of. So, I think for me, surveying my team internally is just coming back from general feedback that we just do day to day. But I do believe, like you said, engagement surveys, satisfaction surveys, really taking a pulse on, what people are thinking, especially if you have, if you've got a lot of employees, how are you ever going to know unless you're asking those questions?
Yeah. Now you brought up something just now that was interesting. It made me think about our CEO and kind of the things he thinks about and what being disconnected and everybody else out of the office. I mean, I think that creativity tends to suffer a little bit. I think, if you think about some of the most creative teams and the way that information gets built upon and laddered, think about Paul McCartney and John Lennon. Could you imagine them writing all those great songs over Zoom?
Over Zoom?
Or, Jagger and Richards, or, Hewlett and Packard, or the Wright brothers.
Right.
There's this need for connectedness that allows for great ideas to be expanded. And
yes.
I think that we've lost some of that, spontaneous, creativity and not being co-located. You don't have that serendipity, which I think is a big piece of developing culture, and it's a big piece of sparking innovation.
Right. Absolutely. And you can't, like you said, you can't, that has to happen, just organically in person. So, what would you say the most progressive project that you've ever worked on is?
Wow. That's a
good
question.
You're on the spot.
No, that's a great question.
I'm an expert interviewer. I'm kidding.
I think that right now, while I can't divulge the client's name, I mean,
that's okay.
Right now, we've got to be progressive. Right now,
right.
I'm working with a financial institution, and they are piloting space. They really want to push the envelope, as it relates to how the why are employees going to have the desire to come back. And when they do come back, what is that experience? And right now, there's a lot of discussion around the user experience. Mm-hmm. And so as far as progressive goes, I've had the good fortune to work on a lot of great projects. We did a project for an energy company in Charlotte a long time ago, about, 8 or 9 years ago. And it was massive. And it was for the time, it was very progressive, a lot more open plan. It was a project that was going for LEED certification.
Yep.
So there were a lot of employee benefits, and the employees were the focus of the project. But I think if you're in kind of an iterative and innovative mode, the most progressive project should be the project that you're working on now. You should be bringing forward everything you've learned, throughout your career, throughout other experiences, and we are trying to bring some of that into this project, because not only did the CEO say when you come back to the office it's going to be different,
right.
And which is comforting to a lot of employees. Employees
yes.
want to know, what are you doing for my health and well-being?
Right.
What are you doing to keep me safe? What are you doing to give me a great experience when I come back in. Why should I get out of my pajamas?
Right.
Why should I? Right. Why should I take a shower and get in the car?
There is a certain allure to that.
I could stay home and get as much work done as I need to.
Yes.
But you know, but you want me to come back in. Why should I fight traffic? You know, why should I worry about
entice
juggling
me.
The kids?
Entice me. I need you to entice me with something good.
Yeah. So there's a lot of that conversation that's going on.
That's pretty cool. All right. We've come to the portion of the episode where I ask for your one up and your one down. So that is kind of a business up and then kind of a business down where it was a learning experience or, you know, something that didn't go the way you hoped it would, but we've all had them, right? We've all had them.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I don't know if I should start with my up or my down first. So,
gentleman's choice.
Yeah. So there's this, let me start with the down first.
Most people do. End on the high note, right?
There was a book that was recommended to me, a while ago, written by Kim Scott, who used to work at Apple. I think she reported to Steve Jobs at one time. And it's called Radical Candor.
Okay.
And candor is a concept that should be a very powerful tool in helping to drive a business forward.
Right.
And so I read this book and I'm like, man, there's some people I need to have really just
candid
truthful,
conversations.
Candid conversations with. And so I tried it out on one business associate and it wasn't received the way it was supposed to be received. The message was supposed to be very positive. Like, hey, how can we work together to really improve this situation?
And
it kind of went south and it took a while to kind of repair that relationship. And I'm a relationship person. I value my relationships. I try to treat people with dignity and respect and treat them the way I want to be treated. I think the book has got a great message. If anybody's out there, pick up Radical Candor. It's a great message. It just needs to be nuanced a little bit. Oh God, business highs. I've been very fortunate. So I belong to a professional group called Cornet Global. Very large.
Seen you post about that.
Yeah, very very large. 11,000 person worldwide organization, and I came down to Charlotte from Chicago in 2007, and I was fortunate enough to have had activity in the Chicago chapter for Cornet Global.
Okay.
And I brought some of those relationships and some of that connectivity down to Charlotte and some of the ideas from that chapter. And I was able to get involved in the business community pretty quickly in Charlotte. And
nice.
Charlotte's a pretty welcoming city to begin with because it had been so transient subprime market bust, banking crisis, but it still is very inviting. And so I was able to get on some committees and nominated and elected to be the chapter president a few years back. And, you know, that was just an honor to have your peers kind of recognize you in that regard. And it's just been a great experience. So I think having that involvement in that professional group is really something that's been a high for a long time.
Of course. That is awesome. Yay. So what haven't I asked you? Got anything you want to share that?
Oh gosh. You know, I see you didn't know, but when you invited me on, you know, I'm a bit of a Renaissance man. I mean, we could have talked about food, we could have talked about music.
I know.
We could have talked about just a wide range of topics and filled up an hour like that. I mean, it would have been a piece of cake. No, I mean I'm just blessed. I'm very fortunate. I've got a great opportunity with a nationally recognized and award-winning design firm and who does things differently. And I think that's all anyone asks for is like the ability to share how you're different and how you differentiate yourself in the marketplace and the value you can drive for clients. Because again, one of our pillars is we want long-term clients, because you get to know them, you get to be a part of that team.
It's so much more fun. I've always said that as well. And we're blessed as well. It's just I've had some clients for the entire time we've been in business. And so it's been really fun to watch them grow, but then grow with them. And everybody's changing, and it's just really fun to have those long-term relationships.
Well, so what's your most recent up? I
Oh
don't want to hear
wow,
about your
I love
data.
it. I love it when people turn the tables on me. So I think our most recent up here is that we all, my whole team is getting, actually, two of us now have our WELL AP designation. Yes, and a third is taking the exam at the end of the month. And we have fully embraced the WELL Building Standard and what that's all about, because it is, of course, about the people and the occupants of the building. And so we're just super excited about it. And I think all of us just being able to go out there and say that my entire organization has their WELL AP. I mean, like I said, there's only three of us, but small but mighty. But that we do have that, and we are all super passionate about it, and we are integrating those concepts and that, science-backed thought process into how we help our clients with furniture and the related design services with
Yeah,
that.
it's added value, right? It's the ability to do some things that others can't do. And I think that's one thing I love about having our process. It's repeatable, it's scalable, it's something that we use on every project, again, no matter the size. And we received another compliment. We're not the largest architectural and design firm in the country. We're definitely not the smallest, and we punch above our weight. We're very fortunate. We have some world-class clients, Fortune 500, Fortune 100 firms that we've been able to engage with, and we're just again, we're blessed to be able to have those relationships and that ability, that dialogue with those firms to hear what they're going through. So we're lucky.
No, I love it. I always tell people I get a little spicy when people are like, "Oh, but you guys are so small." I'm like, "Well, why does it take somebody else 25 people to do what we can do with three?" But it's just I also think some people are like, "Oh, you've never grown past a certain amount." Well, I don't want to. I want to stay small, nimble. I want to be able to, fully enjoy and work with each client, and like I said, build those relationships. So no, I love it. Ah, I could sit and talk to you all day.
Let's see, what have we
That's
talked
awesome.
about?
Exactly. So how would people get a hold of you? What's the best way if someone wants to talk to you more or engage your services?
Yeah, so I would be happy to engage, share whatever we can about what we're learning with our clients. Again, those end user roundtables that we've put on throughout COVID have been great to share, where we've developed a really nice knowledge community. I can be reached at clapata@bhdp.com. And our website, www.bhdp.com. And happy to engage and share whatever we can. I would highly recommend anybody that's in the commercial real estate or corporate workplace environment or sector to check out Cornet Global. It's a fantastic place to connect. Hopefully, knock on wood, we'll all be back at conferences and meetings and networking events together in person sooner than later. That's my hope.
Yes.
Yeah.
That would be amazing. I think it's funny because, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, not another. I got to travel for this trade show or I got to do this. Now people are going to be like, yay, I'm very excited for that.
Oh my God. It's so funny you say that. So I was invited to a economic development board luncheon in Greensboro. Greensboro is between Charlotte and Raleigh. It's right off the highway. So I was in Raleigh coming back, and a general contractor friend of mine invited me to this luncheon. And they stuck by every protocol, every CDC guideline, every state guideline. There, it was 25 people. Everybody had masks. They had these, big 10-person tables for lunch, and only 4 people were at the table.
Okay.
This was only a couple months ago, and it was the first kind of networking / luncheon that I had attended in a long time.
Right.
And it was so complete. You had the rubber chicken for lunch.
Yes.
With the really stiff mashed potatoes, and then you had a person up there giving a really boring PowerPoint presentation, and it was like, oh, this is just like old times.
This is Oh my gosh, that is too funny.
It's funny what we are missing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for being our guest, and have a fantastic rest of your week.
Thank you, Courtney. Great to see you, and I'm sure we'll be talking again soon.